Okay, so I guess we'll start. Today, homework, what the sign problems that two is due. I have not yet posted homework set three. I'll do that when I get back to my office. So that will be due a week from today. And I should also mention that we're getting towards the end of the material that would be covered on the first midterm exam. Last topic I want to cover is inverses of square matrices. That's going to take at least a couple of lectures. And so maybe I'll finish that by the end of this week. But then you have a problem set on inverses of matrices to carry out. So I don't think the first midterm could occur at the very earliest. It would be the end of next week. But I think more likely it will be the following week. At any rate, have a look at your schedule, because I'd like to schedule things at least a week in advance. And so we'll have a discussion this week as to exactly when the first midterm will occur. But I think it's maybe likely not next week, but the following week. I suspect when I pull the class that people tend to choose the latter date rather than the former date. But of course, if you have other exams, you have a big engineering exam, I'll take that into account. There's lots of people taking two exams on the same day. I just assume move the exam to make things clear. Okay, so what we're going to do today is we're going to finish up with our method of solving linear systems. I've got a number of examples, but there's one last step that I didn't really haven't covered explicitly, and that's how you go from the augmented matrix in reducer echelon form to the hyperplane expression of the solution. So I'll cover that today, and then what I'm going to do is just do some examples. The key thing to watch, of course, is going to be the row reduction process. That's easy, but part of the calculation, but unless you've seen it done several times, it's kind of visual, so I need to demonstrate it. But once you see the pattern and what you're looking for, it's pretty easy to do. Okay, so we'll start by recapping our method, and then we'll concentrate on how to go from an augmented matrix in reducer echelon form. So remember, the augmented matrix encapsulates the data that goes into specifying a linear system. But they're easier to work with. It's easier to manipulate an augmented matrix by doing elementary row operation than it is to manipulate sets of equations. So we operate on the augmented matrix that corresponds to a linear system. Our goal then is to get to the augmented matrix of the solution, and that's going to be an augmented matrix in reducer echelon form. Once we get that, we'll convert back to equations. And then the last step is going to be to express our solution as a hyperplane. Okay. Oh, so for those of you who are coming in just now, I realize that this classroom is way, way off in the boondocks compared to other, for example, engineering. So, yeah, I don't mind you guys coming in late. Okay. But what I did say is our first exam is likely to be the earliest possible would be the end of next week, but more likely 2 weeks from this week, okay? All right, so the row reduction method is where you take a linear system, a bunch of linear equations and unknowns, and you take the coefficients and the numbers that appear on the right-hand side of the equations, and you consolidate them in a single matrix. And then the idea is to perform elementary row operations. These are operations we can perform on the augmented matrix that effectively correspond to things we can do to equations that don't change the solution. And the idea is to take the augmented matrix of the original system and systematically convert it to the augmented matrix of what we would call the solution. Then, once we get the augmented matrix of the solution, we could convert that to the equation, and finally we're going to write down the solution set as a geometric hyperplane sitting inside the space of variables. So we pretty much covered the first two steps, and what we'll concentrate on today on this last step. So, just to remind you, linear your systems, linear system of, depicted here is a system of n linear equations in m unknowns. That gets converted into an augmented matrix where you grab the coefficients and the numbers from the right-hand side and form this so-called augmented matrix. It basically encapsulates all the data that goes from the equation, and in fact, you can pass back and forth directly between these two depictions of a linear system. The goal is to take the augmented matrix and reduce it to use row operations to change it to reduced row echelon form. So let me remind you very quickly of the forms of these matrices. We say a matrix is in row echelon form. This means it's a kind of upper triangular, another, although this is actually a little bit weaker than row echelon form. What we're requiring is that you look at a matrix, there's going to be zeros that, if it's in row echelon form, the zeros are sort of pushed off to the left and downward. And then you might have non-zero entries at other parts of the matrix. The key thing for a matrix in row echelon form is that the first non-zero term that occurs in any row, the way they appear in the matrix is in a sort of downward staircase fashion. Color. Here's what I'm talking about. The pivots are moving downwards and off to the right. All right, now, to get in reduced row echelon form, we have two additional requirements. You want the pivots to all equal one. And then, furthermore, if you have a pivot in a lower row, you can't have non-zero entries above it. But if you have a column that does not have pivots, you can have a number here. As long as there's no pivots in this column, you can have numbers up in this upper right-hand corner. So the way you go from row echelon form to reduced row echelon form is you rescale the rows to make sure the pivots are all equal to one, and then you use the lower rows to clear out entries above the above pivots. Okay, and the idea is that these matrices in reduced row echelon form, first of all, they're unique for any given matrix. Take an arbitrary matrix, there's only one reduced row echelon form that corresponds to it. And secondly, of course, these are the augmented matrices that would correspond to the solution of a linear system. That is, what I mean by that is that when I write down the equations for a matrix in reduced row echelon form, it appears to be the best expression for the solution of the actual linear system. Okay, now, what I'm going to concentrate on today is how we go from a matrix in reduced row echelon form to a hyperplane. So that discussion is going to begin with these ideas of what fixed variables are and what free variables are in the solution. You see, when we solve system of equations and we have fewer equations than we have unknowns, we don't have enough conditions to specify the variables uniquely. And in general, you're going to have infinitely many solutions. So how do we talk about the size of the solution set? Well, it's basically, we consider its dimension rather than the number of points that's in the solution set. And that dimension of the solution set is going to effectively be determined by the number of free variables in the solution. So let me explain what I'm talking about. Here's one equation and two unknowns. I can rewrite the equation by solving for y, typically what you would do in high school. And what this is telling me then, that for any particular value of x, the value of the other variable is fixed. So if you think of x as being the free variable, and the y is a secondary fixed variable that's determined by the value of the free variable in the solution. So when I write an equation this way, I solve for one variable in terms of others, I call this a fixed variable, and this a free variable. But of course, for this equation, I could have also chosen to solve for x rather than y. I just interpret it differently. In this instance, I would say that x is the fixed variable because it can be specified once I fix the value of y. Y would be the free variable in this equation, x would be the fixed variable. Okay, so when we're labeling variables by letters, maybe we can order them in alphabetical order. But more typically, what I'm doing when I talk about variables is I'm using subscripts rather than different letters to distinguish the variable. And I think I want to point out is that in the previous slide, I had x and y, and I had a choice as to which I regarded as a free variable and which I regarded as a fixed variable. But our row reduction technique is going to tell us naturally which variables are free and which variables are fixed in our solution. It's just a simple rule. In this augmented matrix, each column on the A part corresponds to a particular variable. We'll say that a variable in the corresponding to the ith column is going to be a fixed variable if that ith column contains a pivot. So, for example, here we have a pivot in 1, 2, 3, 4 column. In this fifth column, we have a pivot. That would mean that the fifth variable, x5, is to be regarded as a fixed variable. It's also possible to have columns in your augmented matrix that does not contain a pivot. Those variables are going to be regarded, the corresponding variables are going to be regarded as free variables. Let me give you an example. Okay, so here's an augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form. Where are the pivots? Here, here, and here. We're only looking for pivots on the coefficient side of this augmented matrix. And what I deduce from this is that because columns 1, 3, and 5 contain pivots, I'm going to interpret x1, x3, and x5 as fixed variables. Since there are no pivots in the second and fourth column, I'm going to interpret those two variables, x2 and x4, as free variables. And then what I can do is, well, I can convert this augmented matrix into equations. 1 times x1 plus 2 times x2, 0 times x3 minus x4 plus 0 times x5 is equal to 1. That's how I got that first equation. Similarly, I get two more equations from the two other rows in that matrix. Now is where we apply our interpretation of the variables as being fixed or free. Here are my free variables, or my fixed variables, right? Column 1 has a pivot, so it's fixed. Column 3 has a pivot, so x3 is fixed. Column 5 has a pivot, so x5 is regarded as fixed. What I'm going to do is I'm going to move the free variables to the opposite side of the equation. And then what I end up with is an expression for the fixed variables in terms of the free variables. And so this happens really naturally. soon as you get the augmented matrix, not only you get the equation, but you also get an interpretation of the variables as either being fixed, corresponding column pivot, or free variables, of course, if they don't have pivot. And the rule we follow, once we write down the equations, is we just move the free variables over to the right-hand side. And in that way, we see that the fixed variables are explicitly determined by the free variables. Yeah?
Before we name our fixed and free variables, do we have to get it into our ES form?
You need to get it in at least row echelon form. I'll remark now that in this process of row reduction, once you get it in row echelon form, the position of the pivots doesn't change any further. After you get it in row echelon form, you rescale the pivot, but that doesn't change the position in the matrix. Or you clear out entries above pivots, but that doesn't change the position of the matrix. So in fact, once you get to row echelon form, you can tell how many free variables you have in the solution. Because of subsequent row reduction is not going to change the position. You can see how many columns you can fit. Yeah?
In the equation 2, is one of those supposed to be x3?
Yeah, sorry. This should have been x3. Yeah, the point was to solve for the fixed variables in terms of the free variables. Yeah?
Do we want to eliminate free variables? Or?
That's the next step. Okay, so the next step, so what we're working towards is a hyperplane expression of the solution. All I've done so far is the row reduction has simplified the equations as much as we can simplify the equation. In fact, we regard these equations as the equations of the solution. That's made a little bit more explicit when we pick a subset of our variables and are able to express them uniquely in terms of the free parameters. So that's, if we were doing high school algebra, this would probably be about the best presentation you could have for the solution. But we're looking for a geometric interpretation as well. So our process is not going to be completed with this stage. Rather, it's going to be, we're going to take this vectors whose coordinates or whose components satisfy these conditions. We're going to express them as points on a hyperplane. But it's pretty simple to do. The first thing you do is you write down a typical solution vector. So this guy is supposed to be a solution. Here's going to be a component before we actually apply any equation. But recall that x1, x3, and x5 are all fixed variables. What I'm going to do is I'm going to replace the fixed variable in the general vector by the solutions, the equations for the fixed variables in terms of the free variables. And then I get a vector that's clearly dependent only on the free parameters. And you can see that by changing the numbers x2 and x4, we'll get various vectors in the solution. All right. So that's not quite a hyperplane yet, but it's really easy to extract the hyperplane from that. What we do, if we take that solution vector, expressed, some people would call this a parametric expression of the solution. Think of x2 and x4 as the parameters, which as you vary, you generate the whole solution set. Well, what we do is we expand these vectors like this in terms of the free parameters. So the first thing I do is I look at each component and I break it up into constant terms and terms proportional to one of the free variables. So in this first component, there's a 1, this should have been a minus 2. Sorry, that would have been a minus 2 because its coefficient is minus 2 and then minus x4. And similarly, x2, it only appears once there. So I guess this vector consists of all the constant terms that I picked out of each component of this five-dimensional vector. So constant, constant, constant. I put those in a single vector. This next vector, it corresponds to the terms that involve X2. So I got one from here and one from here, but the last three components don't depend on X2 at all. So I just have zeros there. And then I have another variable, X4. I grab all of its appearances in the various components of this vector, and it appears in three slots, and I just put it there. And then finally, what I do is that these two terms have common factors in each component, X2 and X4. So I pull out those common factors. The point of doing this is that now I've actually displayed the solution vector as a point on a two-dimensional hyperplane, or two-dimensional plane. Here's the starting point. Then I have some parameter times one direction, and another parameter times another direction. In other words, the solution has the form of a hyperplane, starting point and two directions from which we can stray from that starting point to generate the whole infinite flat surface. And to see the direct connection, I just interpret this constant vector as my starting point. This vector being multiplied by x2, I think of that as the vector v1, and the vector v2 replaces this constant vector. And I'm interpreting x2 and x4, the three parameters in my solution, in the same way I interpret these parameters t1 and t2 that generate the hyperplane. By varying these numbers t1 and t2, I get the entire hyperplane. By varying x2 and x4, I generate the entire solution set. Okay? So it's pretty easy and straightforward to pass from the augmented matrix in reduced echelon form to this hyperplane expression of the solution. This line up here, that's how we like to see this solution presented in linear algebra. All right, so how do we do that? Let me adjust the screen a little bit. The first thing we do, once we have an augmented matrix in its ideal form, neutral echelon form, we look at it and distinguish variables as being fixed or free variables according to whether the column that corresponds to a variable contains a pivot or not. And then we write down the equations, moving the free variables to the right-hand side. That gives us equations that express the fixed variables directly in terms of the free variables. The next step is to write down a general solution vector where, for the fixed variables, we replace the expression, say, x1, if x1 can be expressed in terms of the free variables. Rather than putting x1 in the solution vector, we use the expression for x1 in terms of the free variables. And then the last step is to expand that solution vector in terms of the free parameters. And then you'll get the hyperplane solution. Okay, so that's the method. And what I'm going to do for the rest of today's lecture is just work through examples. So we'll get to the last part where we write down the solution hyperplane, but this is good. I'll start with an example where we work from start to finish. Okay, so in this example, what I'm going to show you is what happens when your equations have some hidden redundancies. When I first began to talk about linear equations, I said that, well, normally the size of your solution set, the dimension of your solution set, is the number of equations subtracted from the number of unknowns. You have a number of variables, and every time you impose an equation, effectively, you fix one of the variables in terms of the other variables. So here we have three equations and three unknowns. I should expect, naively, a solution set of dimension zero, because I have as many equations as I have unknowns, then it should be possible, naively, to fix the variables uniquely. However, what we'll see in this example is that, in fact, we have more than one solution to this system of equations. And that's because somewhere in the system of equations is some redundancy. It's not obvious, but our row reduction process is actually going to expose that. All right, so let's go ahead and calculate a solution to this. We take the equations, we read off from the equation the corresponding augmented matrix. Here, coefficient 1, and the number on the right hand is 2. That explains the first row, and the other rows are similarly calculated. And then we start with our row reduction process. All right, so let's look at this equation, this augmented matrix. It's not in row echelon form. And remember, our first goal in the row reduction is to get the matrix in row echelon form. We want the pivots occurring in a downward staircase. But that's not happening for this original matrix because here we have pivots in the first column in each of the three rows. I want to get rid of this guy and this guy. We get a pivot in this upper column, and we want these guys to be replaced by zero, so at least it's in row echelon form up to the seventh row. All right, so how do I get rid of these two entries? Well, I use the first row effectively to remove the leading term in the second row and in the third row. All I have to do to get rid of this guy is replace the second row by its difference with the first row. Then I'll get, let me show you the result. I'll have 1 minus 1 is 0. Negative 1 minus 1 is negative 2. 1 minus 1 is 0, and 0 minus 2 is negative 2. So you just march across the row to figure out what that row operation does. And similarly, to get rid of this 3 underneath the pivot in the first row, what I can do is I can subtract 3 times the first row. I need to multiply by 3 the first row so that I can get a cancellation here. And indeed, 3 minus 3 times 1 is 0. 1 minus 3 times 1 is negative 2. 3 minus 3 times 1 is going to be 0. And 4 minus 3 times 2 is going to be negative 6 plus 4 is minus 2. Okay, so I've got the matrix in row echelon form, at least up to the second row now, but I have another pivot sitting directly below another pivot. So I want to get rid of this guy, but that's easy to get rid of. All I have to do is subtract the third row from the second row, and I'll get rid of about all the terms. So when I subtract row 3 from row 2 and use that to replace row, I get a 0 row at the bottom. All right, so what happened here? Each of these elementary row operations is just taking a multiple of one row and adding it to another. What I've managed to do is combine these rows in such a way that the rows add to 0. Well, think of that in terms of equations. That means I have a way of combining equations so that I got the trivial equation, 0 is equal to 0. Well, that happens because suppose you have equation 1 plus equation 2 plus equation 3 equaling 0. Well, that means that equation, say 1, can be expressed as a linear combination of the other two equations, and so in fact, these equations are not independent. If they can sum to zero, that's how you would produce a zero row, then in fact, one equation depends on the other two equations. And there was a redundancy, and it's been exposed, not by looking for it directly, but simply following our row reduction algorithm. It got naturally exposed. Okay. So the redundancy has shown itself. I don't exactly know what linear combination of the three equations I started off with will produce a zero equation, but I'm not even really concerned with that.
I've now reduced my system of three equations and three unknowns to effectively a system of two equations. And that's the principal point of getting to row echelon form. When you reach this stage, you effectively eliminated all the redundancies in the equation, but there's still more work to do before you actually get to the solution. All right, so the next step, we've got the row echelon form. The pivots are going to live where they're always going to live for the rest of the calculation, but the augmented matrix is not yet in its simplest form. So we'll row reduce further. This time we'll try to make the pivots equal one, and we'll try to clear out entries that live above pivots. Below pivots, we've already built, cleared out all the entries. All right, so to get that pivot equal to one, I simply divide the second row by minus two, and there I get a matrix that is two-thirds of the way to reduce row echelon form. The final step is to get rid of this entry that's sitting above the pivot in the second row. And that's done by simply adding a multiple of the second row to the first row that will clear out that entry. So I subtract the second row from the first row, and I use that to replace the first row, and that produces the matrix in reduced row echelon form. Good. Our row reduction is finished at this stage. We've now got the augmented matrix of the solution. The next step is to actually write down the solution set and express it as a hyperplane. All right, so let's start with our augmented matrix. Move the screen a little bit again. All right, so x1, x2, and x3, those are the variables that correspond to these columns. X1 corresponds to a column with the pivot, so that's fixed. And X2 is also, that column corresponding to X2 also contains the pivot, so that's fixed. But the third column, it has a non-zero entry, but it's not a pivot. So that's going to be my free variable. All right, so let's proceed and write down the equations corresponding to the augmented matrix. And then we'll simplify the equations. The zero coefficients make the variables disappear. And then these are the equations of the solution. But at this stage, I have not yet made it obvious when I'm regarding it the free variable was fixed. To make that explicit, I'll move the free variable as predicted by the augmented matrix, I'll move them to the right-hand side. So from this, X3 turned out to be the only free variable, so I'll move it to the right-hand side, and now each of the fixed variables is expressed either in terms of a constant or in terms of a constant in the free variable. Good. I'm getting to this almost to the end now. Here's a generic solution vector. When I substitute in for the fixed variables in terms of the free variable, I get a vector that depends on the free variable. And the last step is to simply take this vector and expand it in terms of the free variable. So I have a constant vector, 1, 1, and there's no constant in the last term. So here's the constant term. And then there are terms proportional to x3, the minus 1 in the first component and 1 in the third component. So there you see that's how the numbers came about. And what I've got then as a result is an expression for the solution. Didn't really show up. But at the bottom of the page, which is off the slide, unfortunately, what you should think of this is an expression as a hyperplane, well, actually a line, because there's only a single vector here, T1, allowed to range over the entire real line, just as X3 is allowed to range over And so this is the hyperplane, actually the line that contains all the solutions to the original linear system. Okay, so that's the method. And let's just do some more examples, but I'll pause here and see if there are any questions. Yeah.
Do you mind going back to slide? I got lost, like with the x3, it's not zero.
Yeah. All right, so let's go back to the beginning. So, at least the augmented matrix is the usual echelon form. So here, I'm gonna decide what variables I'm gonna regard as free and what is fixed. The free variables are the ones that don't have pivots in their corresponding columns. It's only x3 here. So let's just remember x3 is our free variable. And then the other two variables where we have pivots in the columns, those are gonna be fixed. All right, so now we just go ahead and write down the equations, but the next step is to reinterpret x3 now as a free variable, so I'll put it on the other side of the equation. And now you see my two fixed variables have been expressed either in terms of things that don't depend on any variable or in terms of the free variable. All right, so what I have now is an expression for x1, an expression for x2, but I don't really have any equation for the free variable x3. So when I write down a solution vector, I can substitute for x1, I can substitute for x2. Remember, x2 is just equal to 1. And then x3 is free, so I leave it alone. And now I've got my solution. Every vector in the solution is going to be expressed in terms of the free variable x3. And then the last step is simply take this vector and expand it in terms of the free parameter. The constant terms, the terms that depend only on the free parameter x3. Okay? All right, so, other more questions? Yeah?
Whenever we are going into the hyperplane form, the variable t is what's changing, but the v1 and the v2 are just a vector, or is it?
Yeah, they're vectors. So the way you build the hyperplane is you have a starting point, and then you stray from that starting point along the given set of directions. But how far you can extend is going to be, well, when I write it this way, it depends on how long this vector is. It's going to depend on the size of x3, right? When you scale a multiply vector, basically you just change its length. And so what I mean is by an expression like this is that x consists of all vectors that start at this point and head off in this particular direction some distance. Okay. Like on the blackboard. The way I fill out the blackboard is I can pick a point and I go a certain distance in one direction and a certain distance in the other direction. But I reach other points in the blackboard by varying these distances. So let me see if I can draw an example. So this point here, it would correspond, I guess, I want to draw something that forms a sort of parallelogram. Then we go down here. All right, so this side here is perpendicular to that direction, or parallel to that direction, and this side here is perpendicular to this direction. So by taking it, following this linear combination, this vector plus this vector is going to produce the given vector of the blackboard. So it's a way of, we think naturally of using Cartesian coordinates to reach every vector in the plane. All we're generalizing this to is maybe those vectors are perpendicular, but they will still generate the entire plane. Okay? Yeah, it's a line. It's a line because there's only one free parameter. So there's only one direction from which we can stray from this initial starting point. Okay? All right, so let's do another problem with solving large systems of equations is sometimes they'll contain contradictions that are not going to be obvious. And what I want to show you is how the row reduction process actually exposes the contradiction. So in this example, I'm deliberately setting up a set of three equations in which there's an internal contradiction. To see that contradiction, let me take the first equation, I get the second equation, subtract the first equation from it, and then I get, well, combine these two equations, and I get the right-hand side, the left-hand side of the third equation, but what happens on the right-hand side is I get 1 instead of 4. So in fact, these two equations produce an equation that contradicts the third equation. So there is going to be a contradiction inherent in this linear system. It's just not obvious. And you don't want to be, for large systems, you don't want to be looking for contradictions. One of the big achievements of the row reduction process is it finds them for you. And it will tell you fairly early on whether or not the solution, the linear system even has a solution. All right, so I'll show you how this works. Here's the original linear system. On this slide, I've gone ahead and I've written down the corresponding augmented matrix. We'll apply our procedure for solving a linear system with this augmented matrix. We have a pivot below the pivot in the first row, so I'll use the first row to eliminate this entry in the second row. That creates this, and now I have a pivot and a pivot below a pivot. I want to clear out this entry by, subtracting the third row from the subtracting the second row from the third. And what will happen is I'll get this augmented matrix. Let me just stop here, because to my eye, I can already spot the contradiction. Let me tell you how I'm seeing that. If you look at these elementary row operations are not changing the solution set. I've done some elementary operations. I've got down to this third row. Let's convert it to an equation. And it says 0 times x1 of 0 times x2 of 0 times x3 has to equal 3. Well, evaluate the left-hand side, you get 0. Everything's being multiplied by 0. The right-hand side takes 3. So 0 is equal to 3? No, it's a contradiction. So in fact, the way you identify contradiction, not by manipulating the equation, but rather put the equation in an augmented matrix, row reduce, and if you end up with a row that has a non-zero entry in the last column, that means you're going to get an equation that says 0 is equal to that non-zero number, which is going to be the contradiction. So, at this stage, your problem stops because there is no solution to your system. It doesn't make any sense to even say, try to count the number of free variables because there's no solution. All right, so when this phenomenon happens, when you get all zeros on the coefficient side and a non-zero number in this last column, that means that your solution, that there is no solution to the original linear system. Okay, so in summary, as you row reduce the matrix, you'll be given clues as to what's going on in the original system of equations. First of all, any time a zero row appears, you'll move it to the bottom of the matrix. So that'd be part of the row reduction algorithm. But it's also telling you that in your original system, there was one equation that was superfluous, at least one equation. Get a zero value. And so that's going to tell you that your count of the size of the solution, that your naive count is going to be off. So naively, what you expect to take the number of variables, you subtract the number of equations, that's going to give you the size of your solution set. That's only true when there's no redundancies in your equation. So when a zero row appears, it's going to mean that your solution set is actually larger than you would expect because there's fewer effective equations than what you actually started off with. And then if a pivot appears in that last column, that's going to mean you have a contradiction. If a pivot appears in the part of the augmented matrix that corresponds to the numbers on the right-hand side, if you have a non-zero number there, but zeros on the coefficient side, that's going to imply a contradiction. Okay, so the row reduction is going to actually take care of the technical point. It's going to take care of the natural. All right, so just to give you a visual way of seeing this process, you start off with a specific equation, you write down an augmented matrix, you use these three elementary row operations. You change the order of the rows, you can change the row vectors by a scalar factor, and you can add multiples of one row to another. Use that to replace a row. These are the allowed operations that, when used systematically, will always take you from an arbitrary matrix to a unique matrix if you use row echelon form. Row echelon form is just where you have the pivots occurring the downward staircase. And this didn't show up on screen.
Does it? Yeah, it does a little bit, I guess.
To get in reduced row echelon form, you need to get the pivots to have value 1. That's done simply using these row rescaling operations. And then you need to clear out entries that sit above the pivot point. So here's a pivot. I would need to clear out those entries. And there you'll typically use these operations. I should also remark that the procedure by which you apply these operations is different. When you're trying to get through row echelon form, the idea is you start up in the upper left-hand corner and you systematically work your way down and off to the right as you eliminate entries below pivots. When you're trying to get reduced row echelon form, there your problem is the entries that lie above pivots. And so you start at the bottom right-hand corner, you use the pivot here to clear out the entries above. And then you go to the next higher pivot and you use multiples of this row to clear out entries in the rows above it. And you simply, in this part, you start on the upper left corner, you work your way down to the lower right. At this stage, to get in reduced row echelon form, you start in the lower right hand corner, and you sort of work your way up in the matrix to clear out the entries. Alright. So when you reach reduced row echelon form, the goal then is to actually write the solution as a hyperplane. This is an important example. I usually do something like this on the first exam. This first column doesn't have any non-zero entries. Does that mean I ignore the corresponding variable x1? No. It means that x1 is going to be a free variable in the solution because there's no pivot in this column. So just because you have all zeros here, don't forget about x1. It doesn't even show up in any of the equations, right? But what we focus on are the fixed variables. So x2 is going to be fixed, x3 is going to be fixed, and x5 is going to be fixed. And indeed, when I take the equations that come from this augmented matrix, and I move the free variables over to the right-hand side, I get expressions for each of the fixed variables, for each variable associated with the pivot. And then, don't forget about x1, even though it didn't appear in the equations. You write down a solution vector, substitute for the fixed variables, and then we expand the solution vector in terms of the free variables. We have this constant vector, 3, 2, 1, that's its non-zero component. Then we have term proportional to x1. Well, x1 only appears there. So there's your x1 dependent. X4 appears in three components. And in fact, coefficient in the second component is minus 2, in the third component is minus 1, and in the fourth component is 1. And then the sixth variable It's also free, and it appears in core components. And here they are. Line is free, second component, line is two, and the third component, two, and the fifth component, and one, and the sixth. All right, so there's your solution. I guess I'm out of time, so I'll stop here today. What I intend to do on Wednesday's lecture is move on to a new topic. But if you have problems solving linear systems, I'll be happy to address them on Wednesday as well.